Hello, this is Robert Kaplan, Manhattan-based photographer and podcast host at photobrigade.com. You're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Enjoy!
This episode is sponsored by our friends at FreshBooks. Springtime means tax time, and their cloud-based accounting software helps freelance photographers and small business owners get their lives back and get back to shooting by making paperwork a breeze. To sign up for your 30-day free trial, go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thank you, FreshBooks, for your support. Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, Episode 64, Why the Sony A6300 Falls Short. In this episode, my thoughts on Sony's A6300. A serious Canon full-frame mirrorless body may be on the way. Hasselblad returns to its roots. A file-sharing service demands payment before you can actually see the photos. Lens Baby has a cool new lens. The results of an interesting survey of couples married in 2015. And GoPro has found a way to sell you more cameras. All that and more in episode 64 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Robert, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it, brother. Robert Kaplan is a photojournalist and cinematographer based in New York City who has shot for the New York Times, National Geographic, Sports Illustrated, and hundreds of other magazines and newspapers around the world. He's also the host of one of my favorite podcasts, The Photo Brigade. And if you'd like to check that out and see what else Robert's up to, visit him over at robertkaplan.com. That's C-A-P-L-I-N, by the way. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 64 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate you telling your friends on social media and elsewhere and helping to get the word out about this show. All right, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. It's been nearly 2 years now since Sony came out with the groundbreaking A6000. A camera I own and love. So now that the A6300 is in the hands of photographers and they've had a chance to put it through its paces, I've got to say that the honeymoon is over and Sony really needs to up its game with this level of camera. Now, I haven't had a chance to shoot with one yet, but I will at some point. But in the meantime, I'm relying on feedback I'm getting from trusted friends and others in the industry who actually have. The A6300 is a great camera, lest anyone think I'm saying it's not. Hands down, it's an extremely capable body, and it's able to smoke many DSLRs out there, in equally capable hands, of course. As I've always said, the A6000 and now the A6300 are Clark Kent on the outside, but they're actually Superman. And even at $1,000 US, you get so much in the A6300 that it really is hard to complain about it. But that said, I think Sony has missed the mark in a number of key ways with this body. Now, I believe that when they launched the A6000, they knew it was going to be a groundbreaking camera and that people would be wowed by such a tiny, consumer-looking camera that could really handle its business. But you know what? It's been a couple of years now, and pros have become fond of using it, myself included. And you want more out of this darn thing, especially if you're going to pay $1,000 for it. So when you follow up a body like the A6000 and it disappoints in some key areas, it's quite noticeable. And frankly, it's a bit of a letdown. For one, how is it possible that in 2016, we don't have touchscreens on this camera as well as the other Sonys, especially the ones that are way more expensive than the A6300? I mean, seriously. DSLRs with way less functionality have this capability, and if you think about it, we've been trained for years now with our smartphones to operate electronics this way, so why don't we have that yet? You know, Sony needs to get with the program and add touchscreens in its cameras. It is beyond ridiculous now. It's so easy to do. They have that technology. They can do it. It's not like they can't put them in there, so why aren't they? While doing research on this, I was watching a video of one of my favorite shows on YouTube. And here's what Gordon Lang of CameraLabs.com and co-host of This Week in Photo Network's All About the Gear said in a recent episode on the Sony A6300.
I'm not suggesting that we tap our way through the menus, although some cameras can very successfully. I'm not suggesting that we swipe our way through images in playback, although you can do that with touch displays. What I am saying is really important is being able to move a single AF area or a zone AF area more easily than continually tapping a button on the back. Right? I do not want to, I'm constantly moving the AF area, and I hate having to go tap, 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 to the side, tap, 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 up and down, tap, 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 have I got it? Oh, no, no, I think I've got it right. Tap, 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 tap. Oh, they've gone. The subject's gone, or they've got bored. Now, how is that superior to doing this? You've tapped it, you've moved it, job done. Who wouldn't want that? And if you don't want it, switch it off and don't spoil it for the rest of us. I'm a big fan of them, and to me, this camera is much less usable than those from, say, Olympus and Panasonic for day-to-day use because it doesn't have a touch screen. And also, I mean, the continuous autofocusing for video is amazing, and the ability to be able to tap the screen to pull focus as you can with other rival models, you know, would have made this so much more useful.
Now, before I forget, if you want to read Gordon's awesomely detailed review, and that is an understatement, it is ginormous. It's going to take several readings to get through. That's how detailed it is, but it is amazing. No one does it better out there than Gordon Lang. If you want to read this review, head on over to cameralabs.com and search that out. It is amazing. And Gordon has it exactly right. It's embarrassing at this point that the A6300's potential usefulness is hampered by the lack of a touchscreen, among other things. You know what? For $1,000 US, it really should have one. I mean, that is a good chunk of change. And that would make dropping that kind of coin a lot easier to swallow, I think. And don't even get me started on the Sony menu system. That's not Sony's strong suit at all, I've got to tell you. If you have a Sony body or you've ever used one, it is an exercise in frustration to find what you want. Eventually, you get used to it, but it is not intuitive at all. So it sure would be nice if they overhauled the menu system, added a touchscreen across their entire lineup, and worked on making the A6300 successor, or maybe an updated version to it, because we don't want to wait 2 years, that much more robust, right? I mean, they clearly want pros to use the A6300. All the Sony artisans are extolling the virtues of this great body, and it is. It's a really nice body, very capable, but it needs to be taken up a notch, in my opinion, and the opinion of many others. I mean, really wow us, Sony. You've got great gear out there. Just put a little bit more effort into it to make it more user-friendly. Then it can truly be considered a pro body. But for now, there are definitely some clear areas of improvement, and especially with the A6300. The build quality alone could be upped a little bit more, make it a little bit more beefier. It's a little too boxy and toy-like feeling still. You know, I get asked a lot if I'm going to upgrade from my A6000 to the A6300, and honestly, I don't think I will. You know, it's technically a better body, but I don't think it's enough of an improvement to warrant the purchase at this point. I mean, used, I can get about $375 or so for my A6000. Is it really worth another $600 to get the A6300? I don't think so. Now, that all said, I may change my mind after I actually get one in my hands. I mean, we'll see if that autofocus system is really that much better. And that would definitely help when you're shooting sports in action. But based on what friends and others have said, I don't think I'm going to be swayed too much. It's a great camera, no doubt, but for now, my recommendation would be for people to pick up the A6000, which Sony still makes, by the way, because it's a great camera, and put the rest of that money into good glass. Maybe that awesome Sony 70-200mm f2.8 G Master. That would be a sweet lens. I might get one of those myself. That's where to put the money right there. Next. If you're a wedding photographer, or you're planning to be one, or maybe you're just following what's going on in the industry, you may be interested in the results of a recent survey that was just released. This survey, conducted by the wildly popular site The Knot, consisted of responses by nearly 18,000 brides married in 2015, and the data is pretty interesting, I think. They found that 9 out of 10 couples actually do hire a professional photographer to shoot their wedding, and the amount spent, while up just about $50 or so from the previous year, is still up. And the average amount being spent is coming in at $2,618 US. So if you're shooting weddings and you're getting more than that, you're definitely doing better than average. They also found that destination weddings were down as people stayed closer to home, and the average number of wedding guests was also down as well. But they say that the average amount spent per guest was actually up, and couples are spending more cash on themed weddings as well as ethnic elements to make the day more memorable. Topping the list of the most expensive places to get married in the United States were Manhattan and New York City, of course, and Chicago, no surprise there, with the cheapest being Alaska. Now, if you'd like to see the whole survey for yourself, head on over to the show notes for episode 64 at petapixel.com/podcast. Next. For many months now, you've all heard me talk about how if Canon and Nikon are truly to compete in the mirrorless arena, they would need to field systems which use their current crop of lenses. And if we're to believe the rumors that are coming out, that's exactly what's on the way. From Canon. Their EOS M line hasn't exactly set the world on fire thus far, and I think it's become clear that like the Nikon One system, consumers really haven't taken to these cameras, and certainly not pros. Now contrast that, of course, with Sony and Fujifilm, and their cameras have been widely accepted by pros, but not Canon and Nikon so much, not their mirrorless cameras. Well, according to a new report by Canon Rumors, there are now two EOS M models being prepped for release toward the end of 2016, possibly at the big Photokina show in Germany, which is this September. The rumor is an update to the EOS M3, but way more interesting than that is a full-frame 24-megapixel model that would be aimed at the prosumer market. Now, reportedly, rumors of these cameras have come to CR from two different sources, both of whom mention the same sensor and the fact that it would indeed take EF lenses. And it's the EF lenses part that was really obvious. You know, when you have a ginormous lineup of lenses built over decades, of course you'd make a mirrorless body that would accept them. It saves you all those R&D dollars needed to build out another set of lenses, a parallel set. You know, money that could be put into developing compelling bodies instead, right? And unlike Nikon, Canon doesn't rely on Sony for its image sensors, so they can develop a way without having to worry about that part of the equation. I think that when Canon and Nikon both came out with their current mirrorless systems, the push was for lighter and cheaper gear, and that's what consumers wanted at the time. Now though, as mirrorless bodies creep up in size, consumers want more functionality. And if this rumor is true, Canon has seen the light and wants to take on Sony in the mirrorless arena, and that is great for all of us. Now, you may recall that ever since Sony's A7R Mark II has come out, Sony users have been using Canon glass with a less expensive Sony to Canon adapter and have been achieving autofocus speeds fairly comparable to using those lenses on actual Canon bodies. And as a result, Canon has been selling more lenses to Sony users. Now, Canon, of course, would rather you buy a body from them rather than Sony, so this makes a lot of sense, of course. But where does that leave Nikon? Still crickets. You know, I'm not hearing anything about a serious mirrorless system coming out of Nikon anytime soon. So far, just Canon. But you know what? Overall, it's not too late for either of them, of course. Field a serious mirrorless body that can take your lenses, follow up with more bodies just as Sony has done, and you'll keep your customers from switching sides. You know, in the past year, year and a half or so, we've seen a lot of people go from Nikon and Canon over to Sony's camp. And that is worrying Nikon and Canon, of course. So I think we're going to see something out of Nikon eventually here, sometime this year, maybe early next year, but it looks like a Canon mirrorless system that takes EF lenses finally is on the way. But we're going to see just how serious they are about mirrorless, because you know what? Canon and Nikon literally have taken years to update their bodies, and we've seen the most minor of updates when this happens. So stay tuned, because you know what? 2016 is going to be a really interesting year. Next. As we always say here on the podcast, thanks to the amazing technology available to us, sharing our photos is so easy. And so is running your business if you use FreshBooks. Whether you make your money with photography or you have another small business, you'd rather be shooting and editing your photos than dealing with paperwork, right? I know I would. Well, FreshBooks solves this problem by making it incredibly fast and easy. Their amazingly simple cloud-based invoicing solution keeps your cash flow details all in one place so you know exactly who you've invoiced, who's paid, who hasn't, and what your income is. And their FreshBooks mobile app is awesome. It lets you take pics of your receipt and organize them later so you have them all ready to go come tax time. Do yourself a favor and check out FreshBooks. You'll be more prepared, less stressed, and you can get back to enjoying your life and doing what you love most. Amazingly, On average, FreshBooks users get paid a full 2 weeks faster when accepting online payments. They cut 2 days a month of administrative tasks, and they double the revenue in the first 24 months. More time shooting means more time to make money rather than shuffling papers. And right now, FreshBooks is offering a free 30-day trial to our listeners. Just go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thank you so much, FreshBooks. I think by now, most of us have either heard of Lens Baby or have actually used one. You know, they're pretty cool, but for the love of everything awesome, don't shoot everything with a Lens Baby. Just don't do it. You know, these things are specialty lenses. They're not something you're going to shoot every single portrait with or every landscape. These are things you break out for special occasions. But the company has come out with a new lens that I think a lot of people are really going to love. And if you're in a bit of a photography rut, this lens might just reignite that creative spark. The Lens Baby Twist 60 is the company's attempt at allowing users to do something kind of sort of like the iconic Petzval lens of the past. It's a 60mm lens with an f2.8 aperture wide open, and thanks to 12 aperture blades, that's certainly going to help give you that nice bokeh in the background. This manual focus lens is inspired by the famed Petzval lens of the 19th century, and is a more affordable way of giving photographers that iconic circular bokeh in the background, but without breaking the bank. The Lens Baby Twist 60 is available for pre-order now in Canon EF, Nikon F, and Sony E-mounts for $280 US for the full lens, or $180 for just the optic if you already own the Lens Baby optic swap system. The company says these will start shipping May 5th, 2016, and it's certainly a better value than Lomography's Petzval, which comes in at more than twice the price. Although, it's a lot cooler looking and brass. Next. I've got a question for you. Is Hasselblad relevant anymore? I mean, it used to be what most wedding shooters were using. Then a democratization of photography happened, and suddenly a camera that cost as much as a good car didn't seem so wise. It just wasn't the dream anymore. Well, for its 75th anniversary, Hasselblad returns to its roots by targeting the high-end medium format once again. And to that end, the company has announced their new H6D system, and it's stunning. The Swedish-based company, which has made quality medium format cameras that have defined the standard since World War II, calls this new system, quote, a new chapter in medium format photography, end quote. You know, back in the day, if you had a Hasselblad, that screamed professional photographer. And I'm doing air quotes here, by the way. They were not only expensive and required a lot of skill, people would pay accordingly, and that was nice. This new system is available in two flavors, one 50 megapixels, the other 100. They have all new CMOS sensors, a brand spanking new processor, built-in Wi-Fi, dual card slots, SD and CFast, by the way, a new high-resolution touchscreen display, USB 3.0, a shutter speed range from 60 minutes up to 1/2000th of a second, ISO sensitivity up to 12,800, and up to 4K video. Now, I'm saying up to because if you want that ISO 12,800 and the 4K video, you're going to have to spring for the 100C model to get them. And that's because the 50C model tops out at 6,400 ISO and full HD video, also known as 1080p. What's really cool is the 50C has a 14-stop dynamic range, and the 100C comes in at 15 stops. That's going to be amazingly helpful for the landscape shooters out there, of course. Now, the company has had to update their full range of H-series lenses so it can incorporate a new shutter that's capable of these faster speeds available in the H6D. And it's also rated for more actuations as well. But we don't worry about that so much because most people are just never going to wear out their shutter anyhow. And it's not like you're shooting sports with these Hasselblads, so you're probably never going to hit that limit. When you shoot with a Hasselblad, it's a completely different kind of shooting experience. It's not like shooting with a DSLR. While you can certainly handhold them, I think most people are going to find themselves putting these on a tripod, slowing things down, and thinking more about what they're doing. Think landscapes and fashion here. Of this new system, Hasselblad CEO Perry Oesting says, quote, we're back on top of the photography pyramid. It's fitting that we have returned to our pinnacle medium format camera to showcase the innovation and passion that have been present in every one of our first 75 years, end quote. You know, it's a pretty bold statement saying that you're back on top of the photography pyramid. I mean, I get it. They're trying to sell cameras here, but we're going to see once actually people have these in their hands just how they're doing. Phase one might have something to say about that, you know? If you're a current Hasselblad user, there's a trade-in program to ease this thing of the big price tag associated with these cameras, and you may very well want to take advantage of it because the H6D50C comes in at 22,900 euros. That's about 26,000 US currently. And the 100C is priced at 28,900 euros or about 33,000 US. And that doesn't include VAT nor the lenses. Yeah. Skip it and get a car, I say. Next. If you make money with your photography, whether it's your full-time gig or you're doing it on the side to make ends meet, you know how hard it can be to get paid once you've delivered the images to your client. I think most photographers have been screwed over one time or another this way, right? And that's where Fileship.io comes in, as the service only lets clients access the images once they've actually paid. Think of it as a file sharing service, but behind a paywall. So you upload your photos to the service and you get a private shareable link that you can send to your client. Then what they do is they click that link and they're taken to a page where they can pay before they actually gain access to their images. And they shouldn't complain, because that would be awfully rich of them to expect something for free, right? I mean, if you want the images, you've got to pay for them. That seems reasonable enough, but you just never know with people these days. And their website explains it nicely. It says, quote, "So you are in a standoff. You want to get paid, but they want their file. You've gone through the route of putting the file on your favorite cloud host, but you've run out of free space. And the last guy you sent a file that way ran off without paying. You've worked hard, day and night. This is the best work you've ever done. All that you want is what's rightly owed to you. We want you to get what you deserve." That is where Fileship.io comes in. Upload your file, safely and securely send the link. Job's done. You get paid, they get their file. End quote. Now, this service integrates with PayPal, so when you upload the files, you set your price, and then you enter your PayPal email address. The files will then exist at the file ship link they send you for 7 days. Thus, your client has just 7 days to pay you before the link stops working and you have to re-upload them. According to Quartz, this service is completely free to you, but they charge your client a 5% commission on top of PayPal's fee. So if your client owes you $300 US for their photos, they'd now be paying $328.17. And that's where I see a potential problem here. Unless your client is expecting to pay that additional money, you could then have a sticky situation to deal with and an angry client. As with all transactions with clients, it's a good idea to have a contract spelling everything out, of course. That way there are no surprises, and this could be one of them. In my opinion, this is something that you break out when things have gone way off the rails and have gotten to that adversarial stage. When it looks like you're not going to get paid and you want to give them a bit of a deadline, then a service like this makes a lot of sense. Honestly, I think people are better off using our sponsor FreshBooks for your invoicing. That way you can keep things as chill as possible. It'll email them and let them know that they need to pay. It'll give them options for paying, and you get back to doing your business. If you're giving someone 7 days to pay or they can't get their files and you got that deadline on them like that, I don't know. That could rub people the wrong way. But you know what? Contracts. Those are good things. Spell everything out ahead of time and hopefully you won't have as many problems. Next. If you're a GoPro user, you may be interested in a new camera rig called Omni, which allows for 360-degree video and VR. This technology has really taken off in the past year or so, and GoPro wants in on it. So how do they do that? Not with a new camera as others have done, but with a rig which accepts 6 of their traditional GoPro cameras. I say traditional because it doesn't include that oddly shaped GoPro session camera. It has proprietary hardware at the center of the Omni, which offers, quote, "pixel level synchronization," end quote. So if you have 6 GoPros lying around, which most people don't, you can get one of these and your video will be stitched together in a 360-degree piece, which you can view with a VR headset. No details have been released for how much this is going to cost, nor when it'll be available, but I'm having a hard time seeing GoPro selling a lot of these. For one, you need 6 of their cameras. So if you don't have 6 already, and you don't want to buy the additional cameras you need to make use of this, this is not for you. Now, what might be for you is a system which is ready to go, and there are a number of choices out there. And that doesn't require buying a bunch of cameras and sticking them in a special housing like this. Now, the latter, of course, is what GoPro wants, and frankly, they need. Anything they can do to sell more GoPro cameras these days is going to help their bottom line. And while we're at it, where's that GoPro Karma drone that they've been promising, right? I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 64 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, go ahead and email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, and I hope you do, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. And if you'd like to help support the show, don't forget to claim your 30-day free trial at freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 65. Well, it's F8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.